Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowles. Ben Mowles.
Multiple Mowles. MM. Double M.
Wow.
Dub-M.
Dub-M. That intro. You know the spiel, though. Ben Mowell, I'm here as always, joined by my co-host, Jack Wersnowski.
Dub-M. What's the action? And ahoy there, Dub-M.
Dub-M in the house. It's going to be my new DJ name, Dub-M.
Dub-M. That's actually how, so not the truck I have now, but the truck I had before it. Its name was Owaspa. That's what I call it. And the reason why is because it was a 2003 Chevy. And obviously, just talking about it, I can't show you a picture, but maybe some of our audience would know, or maybe you know, Ben, like there was a style of GM truck where the headlights kind of looked aggressive, kind of like they were angry at you, kind of, you know, okay. Planted inwards.
Yeah. But
they, more specifically, like based on how they looked on like the front of the vehicle, they kind of looked like wasp eyes. So I kept calling my truck Old Wasp Eyes because that's what it looked like it had. But then it eventually just slurred into a waspa, and then that was my name for it.
Well, I would say I think I know what you're talking about, and I want to say that model style was like maybe model year 98 and then like early 2000s across a lot of GM products. Like I think I remember Trailblazers kind of having that.
Yeah. It was pretty common for a while.
Yeah. A lot of their like larger SUVs and trucks. So Owaspa from Old Wasp Eyes.
Yes. Owaspa.
Man. Got me thinking. Owaspa sounds like a Native American word. That's how they derive theirs.
You know, that's I kind of liked it for that reason too.
Just gonna hop an Owaspa over here.
I did hear from a video on the internet, so you can trust it, that the preferred term for that people group is American Indian.
Ah, okay.
I always thought it'd be Native Americans, but apparently, like there was some study or survey or something, and that was what they preferred to be designated as. So I don't know if that's true, but I'm hopeful that by me saying that's what I'm aware the preferred term is, so I will use it, demonstrates that I might be getting it wrong, but my spirit's in the right place. You know what I mean? I'm trying to be respectful.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I was just thinking about there's another term.
Owaspa.
that's that. I want to say First Nations.
Oh.
But that might refer more to the like all the tribes in aggregate more than, you know. Yeah.
People
a specific
group?
Person, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, we're in ethnicity. It is always interesting, though. I feel like we're perpetually adjusting terms because it seems like inevitably over time, like the terms that were most pejorative, people don't use anymore. And then it's like now the ones that are still remaining in usage, now like there's those that fall out of favor. So you just kind of constantly... There will always be a term for a people group that's going to be offensive and one that's preferred. But it seems like often the people who are most offended by the pejorative terms aren't even people from that group.
Right. Yep.
It's like being offended on behalf of someone else. And they're like, no, I really don't care. Well, you should care. Okay. Thank you.
I saw like some Facebook posts where I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a black dude posting about something, and he used a term for like black people or said something about black people, and a white guy corrected him saying, actually, that's offensive to black people.
Nailed it. That's one of those like sure signs you don't have anything useful to do with your time, is when you've got to intervene in other people's conversations to correct things. Unsurprisingly, that is not the topic that we had in mind for today, which I would like to get to, because the topic that you proposed is of such human significance, such monumental meaning, such impactful weight that it can no longer be ignored.
I agree.
Put it off. We've put it off for far too long, even though we only just thought of it. This should have been our first topic coming out of the gate. And frankly, I'm a little bit embarrassed and ashamed that we haven't yet resolved this question for our listening audience. So, Jack, would you care to enlighten the listeners as to the matter at hand for today?
I would. So, everybody, there's an age-old question that everybody's been asking for as long as I can remember. And I have never heard a satisfactory answer. And that question is, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? I want to get to the bottom of this once and for all.
No more dilly-dallying.
No. And I'm going to come out of the gate kind of firing on all cylinders. So I was asking myself this question. And the thing I realized that we really need to nail down is when we ask the question, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? When we say how much wood could it chuck, it's like, are we asking like in one throw or like in a minute, in an hour? Like, we need to define that. And maybe we could even come up with different answers for different, you know, scenarios. Like, how much could it just chuck in one go? Like, you know, how much wood could it chuck in just a single throw? What's the max? But then there's also the question of, well, how much, you know, endurance and stamina does it have? Like, sure, it could throw that once, but if you're looking to hire this woodchuck as a professional woodchucker, you know, they're going to need to be doing this all day, every day. So sure, he might be able to do it once or twice really strong, but the stamina might be really bad. So we need to figure that out too.
Does he comply with all the, you know, applicable OSHA ordinances, and does he have insurance? How much is he actually going to be able to get done effectively, you know, after taking out all that time? It also does make me wonder, what role does ground beef have to play in this question?
Oh, so you're thinking not like, so you're thinking of chuck the, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, like round chuck or chuck roast. I mean, I feel like it's got to be in there somewhere. If a woodchuck is chucking things, does that mean he's converting them into ground beef?
So hold on. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? So given the grammar of the question, it seems like he would be converting the wood into chuck. So not chucking it as in throwing it, but like, but chuck is, I was thinking like ground, like how much wood could a woodchuck grind, i.e. chuck, woodchuck could grind wood, but that's not what chuck means. Chuck is just like a cut of
right. Beef. Right. It's the ground part that, yeah, you take chuck and then you grind it.
Yeah. Well, could, okay. Well, what determines if a piece of beef is chuck or not? Because maybe we could come up with the analogy to that in wood. And then the question is, how much chuck wood could a woodchuck grow and develop and bring about?
Oh,
if a woodchuck could grow chuck wood, you know what I mean?
What if we've actually stumbled on the most horrific atrocity in human history, which is that ground chuck is actually a dude named Chuck. They have like farms for men with the name of Charles. They grind them up. We've just been eating chuck burgers our whole lives.
But chuck, so hold on, chuck here is the verb. So it wouldn't be how much chuck could be ground. It would be like, what does it mean to Charles someone, right?
Yeah.
Do we have to figure that out first?
Christian for a long time as well. You really got Charles.
Does that mean that you just like throw a dude named Chuck? Do you chuck a guy named Chuck at someone? And so you just get, you know, walloped by some ragdolled body? Or does it mean like, oh, you know, like they kind of conned you? Oh, Chuck, gotcha. You got chucked.
Wild card.
Yeah, wild card.
Or does it mean like that you develop a scientific theory that, you know, shatters everyone's expectations? Or, you know, that you inherit a throne just because you were born into a certain family?
Wasn't there a show called Chuck?
Yes. I never watched it, but it was like a comedy, I think. About a guy in a store, like a retail store or something like that.
Okay. So maybe it means that the small things in life have been highlighted to, you know, you can appreciate the little things. That's what it means to get chucked. I don't know if that's what happens in the show, but.
Or it could be like Chuck Schumer, where you wear glasses way down on the end of your nose, like the Ben Franklin glasses.
Yeah.
So by that definition, a woodchuck, how much wood could it put on the end of its nose? If it could do that. Also, I don't like the assumption or presumption that a woodchuck can't chuck wood. How do we know that they can?
They probably can.
Built into the question is, well, what if they could chuck wood? Maybe they can already. We've been underestimating them, and we should be estimating them.
I think they definitely, I don't think anybody would argue that they can't, because, you know, they're mammals with hands. They could, and hands? They use them. Well, yeah, or claws, I guess. I'm not sure if they have opposable thumbs. It probably actually wouldn't surprise me if they did. I know raccoons do, and they're sort of close to raccoons a little bit.
Hmm. What is their closest relative, woodchuck?
Beavers, muskrat? Maybe? Or muskrats, yeah.
I mean, a beaver would make sense for the purpose of this question, because then it's like how much... It's like a comparison to a beaver, who we all know as the king of woodchuckers. It's like, what's the equivalent of woodchucks to beavers in terms of wood moving capacity?
What's the equivalent of woodchucks to beavers?
Yeah.
Never thought I'd answer or ask that question. Well, hold on. What was the question specifically? What's the ratio of woodchucks to beavers for woodchucking ability?
Capacity. Yeah.
Well, beavers don't really chuck wood. They do kind of grind wood. They actually eat it. I thought that they literally, people just said that they eat it because they're chewing on it to, you know, cut trees down, but they don't actually ingest it. But I think they actually do.
Are you sure about that?
I watched a nature video on beavers by the renowned Zay Frank, if you guys have heard of him on the YouTubes, hilarious. And yeah, I think they actually eat wood. I don't think that's where they get like most, it's not like what they... their main source of food, but they eat it. They do ingest it.
I've definitely seen a lot of wood chips around trees that they've gnawed down. So they
don't
eat all of it if they, I don't know. But I would still say they do chuck wood, because once they've gnawed it down, they grab that sucker and haul it to whatever body of water they're trying to dam up.
Yeah.
So it's not like flying through the air chucking, but it's, more like trucking. A wood truck. And I must say, they are prolific. Like, within a matter of days, they could have a stream dammed up. Maybe not even that long, depending on the size. But this past summer, I went on a trip to the Boundary Waters, and there was a little stream that normally has pretty decent flow in it, apparently, and it was negligible. Like, you almost had to get out and pull the canoe the whole way. And then we discovered that there was a beaver dam at the head of the stream.
Oh.
that had like just been put up.
I see. So, and how long had it been since you were there before?
I mean, I'd never been there before. But I think we were talking to a couple other groups that had stopped, and they like they'd gone through the other way earlier in the week and it wasn't there.
Oh, dang. Okay.
And
Was there.
it wasn't a big stream, right? It was maybe, I don't know, you'd say like 8 or 10 feet across. But it was still pretty impressive.
Yeah, nothing to sneeze at.
Yep. So anyway, I mean, if you use that as a benchmark, how do woodchucks compare to that? Or how would they compare if they could compare?
If a woodchuck compared to a beaver.
Yeah. That one really rolls off the tongue too. How would a woodchuck compare to a beaver if a woodchuck could compare to a
Compared to a
beaver?
beaver. We're asking all the serious questions here, folks.
I feel like we're doing a verbal, it's like simultaneous equations with words where we're creating equivalencies and then substituting them in for variables to, you know what I mean?
I think so.
Where it's like woodchuck chucking wood is equals woodchuck comparison to beaver. So if you pull that, you know, replace the one variable for the other, then you create your new sentence structure.
Okay, hold on. Let's get back to the spirit of the question. Let's just go back to the original meaning, chucking meaning throwing. So, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck? So, again, we have to establish when we say, when we ask the question, how much can it throw? Do we mean in one throw or like over the period of an hour? And when we say how much, are we going by poundage? Are we going by volume? Are we going by like length? Like how long of a log can it kind of javelin out? You know, what are we, how are we gonna, we need to quantify this, Ben. Now, I think the most reasonable answer to this question is just go by weight and it's a one-time throw. But I would certainly humor the idea of, well, hold on. What about if we ask how many pounds of wood can it chuck over like the span of an hour? If it was like really intent on doing it.
I think it should be mass per unit energy. How efficiently can a chuck wood?
But that's not the question. I mean, I'd love to go over that question, but that's not the question. The question is just how much can it chuck? Whether it's efficient or not is.
Well, but it's how much it can is governed by how efficient it is, because if it's inefficient, it'll overheat. So it can't chuck very much, or it'll burn
Perhaps.
through all its caloric reserves and it'll die. Puts the extreme bounds on the capability.
I don't disagree with that, but I think that is a secondary point.
Okay.
I think like we could determine the efficiency, but that's still not answering the question. It's a factor in the answer, but I don't think it's a very important one, because particularly if we just go with like a one throw, how much can it chuck in one throw?
Well, if we can answer how much it can chuck in one throw, then we can answer the other questions as well.
Not necessarily, because it may be able to be like really strong and throw a lot of wood in one throw, but if it doesn't have a lot of, again, stamina, then it may not be able to throw as much as an animal that, okay, it can't throw as much in one throw, but it can keep that pace up for a lot longer.
So I would say I've seen some woodchucks in the wild. They're I don't know what their weight would be. Maybe like 15 pounds. They're like the size of a small dog,
Sounds about
smallish
right.
dog. So
Yeah.
let's say 15-pound woodchuck. Something to throw, man. I feel like I am not going to throw anything, like actually try to throw something that's more than maybe like a tenth of my body weight. especially not repetitively.
Right. Yeah, because that'd be pretty heavy if y'all would do the math in your head.
Heck, even maybe even like 5% of my body weight if it was going to be repetitive.
I was thinking maybe as much as 20%, but you're at a real risk of hurting yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so if you were, if we were to go out and cut wood and throw it, I mean, say like a 16-inch chunk of log that's 6 or 8 inches in diameter that probably weighs 10 pounds. And you could chuck those almost indefinitely. So, I mean, I'd say if you're talking one throw, you could go up pretty high. If you're talking over long, so let's say one throw, maybe 25% your body weight.
Yeah, and animals do tend to be a lot of, I shouldn't say animals in general, but a lot of animals, particularly I think when you're smaller, tend to be proportionally stronger. So I would say maybe as much as 40% of their weight. And you said what? You think they weigh probably, well, they probably, how much? 50, 5-0?
No, 15.
I don't think so, dude, because I've had cats that are, so here's a bit of a reference. So I have Milo right now, my little blind orange pocket-sized tiger. Before him, I had Carmen. She was a brown tabby, loved to kill things. And when she was younger, we actually, I was living with my parents at the time. I was like in middle school or early high school at this point. I like walked up to in my kitchen, and in the kitchen, we had a window overlooking our backyard patio. Our deck, and I look out, I'm like, holy crap. And there was just this giant woodchuck sitting on like the banister of our deck. And I was like, whoa. And it heard me from inside, and it was like, whoa. And then it scurried away. And then Carmen going outside one day, ran under the deck, and she was just sitting there staring at something. And she wasn't like puffed up. She wasn't in an aggressive stance. She was just kind of curious, just sitting there looking at it. And we just heard this chirping sound, like this chirp, chirp, chirp. And she was just sitting there staring. And I couldn't see it because it was around the corner, and I couldn't get under the deck. But I felt very confident, for reasons that I can't remember, that it was the woodchuck, because we knew the woodchuck was living under there. And after that incident, never saw it again. And she, you know, she eventually came out because I was watching her, and she didn't do anything to the woodchuck. Woodchuck didn't do anything to her. But I bring that up because that cat was got a little on the overfed side, but she weighed like 15, 16, 17 pounds. And that woodchuck was much larger than her. I would say that thing has to have weighed 30 pounds at least, if not 35 or 40.
Okay. So let's be generous. Let's say that we have found the Andre the Giant of woodchucks at 40 pounds.
Okay.
And that for a one-time chuck, it'd be capable of 40%. Okay, so that's 16 pounds.
16 pounds, yep. 16 pounds.
So woodchuck could chuck a 16-pound log. And, I mean, I already estimated that like a 16-inch by 6 or 8 inches in diameter weighs at least 10. If it's not like completely dry.
You said 16 long by 6 in diameter?
Yeah, 6 or 8.
Okay, so that's of 10 pounds, it's going to have to increase by 1.5. So probably not much longer and wider because volume and with a constant density, therefore weight increases to the cube power of proportionally enlarging just one dimension. So going from 10 to 16, you'd probably only need to increase, I don't know, the length by 10%. So maybe as long as 18 inches and 6.5. Or 7 inches in diameter.
Well, if you only increase the length, then it's linear, right?
Sure.
So yeah, you could say 24-inch log
by 6 inches. Yeah. Oh, now this is a question though. It may be able to throw that weight, but does the wood need to be in any particular shape for it to chuck it? Because I don't think woodchucks have particularly long arms, So could it actually hold on to and get a good grip on and effectively chuck a log of that shape? Now we could argue then, well, we'll just get a piece of wood that's that heavy and in a shape to that would accommodate the woodchuck throwing it. So I guess this isn't as big of a point. But that's something to consider too. You know, the actual, it may have the strength, but it may not have the not dexterity isn't the right word, but you know, the ability to actually hold on to something as heavy as it can throw it. So the strength isn't the limiting factor, it's like motor ability. No, not just motor, but you know, like arm span and such.
It's the classic line from when you're helping a friend move. It's not heavy, it's just bulky.
Yeah, exactly.
You
It's
can't see
awkward.
it. Obviously, you can't see it, Jack, neither can our listeners, but I do have my hands held in approximately the spacing of a woodchuck's wingspan
Wingspan.
to figure out how that would work. I think it could do it. It could kind of cradle one paw underneath the log about midway or so, and then the other one could be butted up against the end of the log to kind of give it a shove. So more like a shot put throwing motion in front of its chest. I think it could be done.
I could dig it.
Or we would just supply it with a very dense wood like Cocobolo or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we'll find a way. I think we can find wood that's geometrically accommodating to the woodchuck that would allow it to use all of its strength. Now, another question I didn't consider, Ben. Sure, it can pick up this piece of wood and it can throw it, but are we concerned with distance at all? Because, like, you know, if think about shot put, right? In track or something, anybody can throw a shot put, but it takes somebody special. Like, when you do shot putting, the question isn't how big of a ball can you throw, it's how far can you throw it. And that's the impressive part. So, do we want to include anything like that in the discussion?
I mean, sure. And so we're saying we used our benchmark of 25% of body weight and then scaled up for animal strength to be 40%. If I were to throw an object that's 25% of my body weight, it's probably not going more than like 10 feet before it hits the ground.
Sure, I can dig that.
So I would ascribe the same to the woodchuck, except the woodchuck is much closer to the ground, so it doesn't have the benefit of the additional fall time in flight.
It could prop itself up on its hind legs, but one, it's not, you know, they wouldn't be very tall, and two, that might actually kind of limit its like if it's standing as upright as it can, that would probably limit its strength. So how about this? How about when I don't, because the question doesn't imply distance. It's not asking how far could a woodchuck chuck wood if a woodchuck could chuck wood. It's just asking how much wood can it chuck. So I think it's more of like a binary metric. If you can take this, you know, the by chucking it, it's just you take this piece of wood and you throw it, and you're able to actually throw it, and you're not just dropping it, you're actually giving it some vertical and horizontal velocity. And then as long as you do that, that's considered chucking. And then it doesn't matter how far it goes. Because, right, like any one of us can pick up like 100, I shouldn't say any one of us, but like, you know, if you pick up like a 100-pound sandbag, like you or I, we could hold it on our shoulders and we could like support it. But to throw it, to chuck it, is a different matter. And we could drop it too, right? Dropping would not be considered chucking. I would say you would have to actually take it, heave it off your shoulders, and give it some particularly vertical, you'd have to throw it into the air with some upward component.
I feel like you'd almost, in that scenario, you'd have to like get the bag rolling forward off your shoulder with your hands underneath it, and then lean your whole body forward and like shove upward with both your hands as you're tipping forward. like a caber toss kind of a thing.
I'm not familiar with that toss, but I think I know what you're talking about.
It's part of the Highland Games in Scotland. So it's a post that looks like a telephone pole, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
That they carry, they like hold it, the butt end of it, with both hands around their like waist high or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I can't remember exactly, but I think they like run forward, and then you want the top of the pole, to eventually like tip forward a little bit. And then like as it's starting to fall forward, they just heave the butt end of it as high as they can in the air, and the whole thing kind of goes, you know, top over tea kettle. And you know, it's a distance throwing competition. Maybe they go backward. I don't remember. Anyway. It's an impressive event. So now I'm just imagining little 40-pound woodchucks wearing tartan kilts, running around chucking these woodchuck-sized cabers. I also was doing a little bit of mental math. If we've established it could, let's say it could throw, 16-pound, log 10 feet.
You said that you could throw something that's like, what was it, 10% of your body weight, 10 feet?
That was my 25% of my body weight. I could probably throw 10 feet.
But how much, how far? But again, I don't think the distance component is all that important. But I mean, I'm certainly down for wondering.
Well, I was just going to take the questions the other end of the spectrum that we talked about earlier. If you scaled it down to how much could it throw over a period of time, if you took the 5% body weight number I threw out earlier, that would mean a 2-pound log. And I think you could throw a log like every 5 seconds. If you had a pile and you were like moving them from one pile to another.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 pounds every 5 seconds would be 24 pounds an hour.
What?
Sorry, 24 pounds a minute.
Minute, yeah.
And then, so what does that work out to? 1,440 pounds an hour.
Hey, 1440, that's Radio Disney where I grew up.
Nice.
1440 AM.
Ooh, AM even.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's going to be 1440 FM.
Yeah, I was just... wasn't thinking of the ranges, was just thinking of how uncommon AM radio is these days.
Duh.
Anyway, 1,440 pounds of wood per hour means that... What does that work out to in terms of multiples of body weight for a wood chuck?
Wait, where did the 2 pounds go? Where it come from?
5% of body weight, being able to throw a log 5% of your body weight, more or less indefinitely.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I think that'd be around somewhere between 8 and 10 pounds for me.
So a wood chuck could chuck 3/4 of a ton of wood per hour.
Okay. I could dig it.
Pretty productive.
It is. Woodchucks are very industrious creatures.
At least our math says so.
Now, of course, that's if the woodchuck had it in its... It's like, I'm chucking this wood. Of course, if you just give a woodchuck a piece of wood, it's probably going to ask, you know, kind of give you that look like, what the heck am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, probably.
You want me to chuck it? Am I just your chucking circus woodchuck? Want me to perform? Is that what you want? And then I'd be over there scared out of my mind saying, holy crap, a talking woodchuck.
The like tone and cadence that you took on kind of sounded like Stewie from Family Guy.
Oh.
Not the vocal inflection, but the perceived like slighted ego.
Ah, I see. Well, so the answer is how much could a woodchuck, like a pretty big, strong woodchuck, so we're kind of getting close to the maximum. It could chuck 16 pounds in one go, or it could chuck 1440 pounds in an hour.
That's a lot of pounds.
That's a lot of nuts.
Hey. Wasn't sure if you'd have it handy, but I never should have doubted.
Never. Wait. Ben, ask me how much... Wait, say I think I know how much... You know what? Joke's ruined. Never mind. I was going to do this.
How many would you say? 10 million?
Like, I think I know how many pounds a woodchuck can chuck.
How many would you say? 10 million?
No, I don't think 10 million.
So right close.
Answer is 16 pounds, one chuck, or 1,440-ish pounds over an hour. You heard it here first, folks. We finally answered the age-old question, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could indeed chuck wood?
I'm doing a mental slow clap over here.
So if anybody, like if any kid, you know, or somebody says, oh yeah, well, how much wood could woodchuck could chuck wood? Just say 16 pounds.
And then walk away.
Yep.
Don't explain. Don't elaborate. 16 pounds and bounce.
And if you wanted to take it the next step, you could... we can't do it now. I mean, we could speculate, but I feel like this topic's pretty well wrung out. You could figure out, you know, what's the density of different types of woods and figure out the volume and therefore, like, you know, the length and width of a log or a chopped kind of triangular cross-section piece of wood. And then you could even put the answer in that term.
So now, if you had 5 woodchucks in a log, you could have 4 woodchucks chuck the 5th woodchuck while holding the log, and then the 5th woodchuck, while in the air with the log, could chuck it again, could chuck the log from the air.
It's a lot of chucking.
Yeah, so it'd be like a cheerleading squad of woodchucks.
A chuck-leading squad, if you will.
A chucking chuck. Wow, we really nailed it.
We did. I'm proud of us.
I think so. I'm hearing a standing ovation incoming. So we had a related, not really related, tangentially related topic. Also about animals, which was how do different groups of animals get their names?
Ah, yes.
Well, different groups and different life stages.
Oh, yeah. Like there's cats, but then a young cat is a kitten.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, or dogs and puppies, you know.
Foxes and kits. What's the term for a singular cat for what's the singular for cattle? Because I was gonna say bull or cow, but cow is specifically a female blank being the word I'm looking for.
Cat.
Nope, cow is not a female cat.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
No, that's a question that has actually gnawed at me for years, because cattle is plural.
I think
cow
cattle is even
gender or sex specific.
So is
bull and steer.
Yep.
And heifer. So what do you call an individual? An individual cattle. I think it's cat. Look at that cat.
That's one cool cat. You look over, it's just a cow with some sunglasses on.
Like, Mom, Mom, I saw a cat. What? Well, it's like moose. Moose is plural and singular.
I thought the plural of moose was mooses.
I don't believe so.
Well, hold on. So there's...
I saw a moose or I saw six moose.
I think, like, there is a grammatical situation where mooses is correct for plural, but then moose is correct for plural. I thought, you could say there are giraffe, meaning, like, I saw some giraffe versus using the word giraffes. I thought there were proper instances where you use one over the other rather than one is always correct. I thought.
Well, so there, I mean, take a goose versus geese as an example, right? Goose is always singular, geese is always plural. But for a species like moose, I think there is only one word, whether it's singular or plural. The word carries no connotation of number. So it has to be supplied with the word for the species.
Oh, I love the English language so much. You never know what's going to happen next.
it's partially due to the fact that it's an amalgamation of the languages adjacent to it, right?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of added in vocabulary from all around the world over time.
So real quick, one thing that makes me think that there is that the plural of moose is mooses is because I remember I can't remember where I saw it, but it was an explanation of why is it goose and geese but not moose and meese?
Mm-hmm.
And is instead moose and mooses. I guess that part of it I'm a little fuzzy on. So I don't know if they were making the point that the plural of moose is mooses, or they were just harping on the point that, well, whatever it is, it isn't meese, right?
Right.
And why not? And that's because goose versus geese has a Germanic linguistical source. And so the plural form was taken from the Germanic language and the way that Germanic languages worked. But then moose was a much more recent term that was derived from, you know, the American Indian term for the animal, or at least whichever language the first settlers that named it were exposed to. And so they just applied the usual English pluralization of just add an S or an ES at the end. So it became, they said, you know, what is this animal? Then they heard the word moose, says, all right, we'll call it moose, and then we'll plural so mooses. And then that's how it came to be.
Interesting.
Same thing where you say mouse and mice, but you don't say house and heist. You don't say, oh, look at all these heists, you know, that they're building. You say houses. But you don't say, look at all these mouses on the, you know, in the barn. You say, look at all these mice.
Or mycin, or meese. Or
meese.
Look at all these rodents.
Look at all those chickens.
Yeah.
Do you know what video I'm referencing?
No.
There's this a guy with his daughter, and he just pans the camera, and it's like a field full of, you know, geese, Canada geese, nothing special. But then the camera pans over to his daughter, and she's just like, look at all those chickens.
Nice.
It's hilarious. It's totes adorbs, as the youths of today say.
That reminds me, have we ever talked about the origin of, I think it's in English, the words that are commonly used for prepared meat versus the animal that they come from?
Oh, I don't think we have, but I saw a video somewhat recently. It was an oversimplified video, I think, of some war, you know, in England in like the 13th, or maybe it was a CPG Grey, one of the two, video on something that happened in England in like the 1300s or something. And it, went over that. Went over why that's the case.
So we talked about it in one of my, I can't remember if it was French, I think it was French class in college. I don't remember for sure. But
you took French? I didn't know that.
Two semesters, yeah.
Wow.
I took Spanish all through high school, and I took a couple classes in college, but I felt like they were the difficulty was decreasing. Mm. I wasn't learning anything. And so I switched to French, took that for two semesters, and then French is like 201, whatever the third class was, conflicted with my engineering schedule. So then I took German instead.
Ooh, dang.
And actually was going to take a semester of Chinese, but that also conflicted with my engineering schedule. So that was how I ended up with German. But anyway, whatever the context, the professor was telling us that the way that, like, we have, for example, you could say pigs or swine. Trying to think if there's any other words. But anyway, we have words for like a whole pig animal when it's alive. And then we have words like pork and ham and bacon, whatever else, for, you know, different types of pig meat that's been, you know, butchered and prepared. And so I'm probably butchering this example, but
pun intended.
Yeah. The what the professor was telling us is that all of the words, or most of the words for the live animal, like the whole animal, tended to come from German, I think.
Or Germanic roots.
Or Germanic roots, yeah. Because the people who were farmers and shepherds tended to be from that ethnic background. And then the words that we have for the meat, so beef was the example I remember specifically, come from French roots, because the upper echelons of society, the European royals and such, tended to speak French. And so they didn't, the words for the animals weren't really used for them, because they weren't around the animals, right? They weren't lowly shepherds or farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So the fancier things, like, you know, having steak or ham or whatever, those became more commonly referred to in French words, and then the animals themselves in Germanic words.
Yep. And it's related to, this was back when, you know, England and France were really duking it out over the centuries. And at the time, the Norman rulers, like Normans, the Normans had taken over England and were the ruling class, but they spoke French, whereas the, you know, the common folk of England spoke English, which had at the time, or at least, you know, English ancestor, which had a lot more of a Germanic root to it. And that's the difference, because then the lowly people, as you said, the lowly farmers and shepherds and such, that would raise the animals before they slaughtered them, would call them, those animals, by their Germanic roots. But then once they would slaughter them and send the meat to the aristocracy. Thank you. I like aristocracy. I like that.
We don't call them aristocrats.
Exactly. Then they would refer to, like, they would just say, oh, we're having cow tonight, but the word in their language for cow was boeuf, and that's where beef came from, so on and so forth.
And Shia LaBeouf.
Yes.
Thank God for beef.
Shia the beef.
Hold on.
Got to take a tangent there. Where in the world did his last name come from? Who said, ah, yes, this shall be Charles, and he's Charles the Cow? You know what I mean?
I mean, it's like Cooper or Taylor or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah, but the professions, right? So he wouldn't be, why is it not
Shia Cowboy?
Charles the Butcher. You know, he's not known as Shia Butcher or Shia Boucher. It's, you know, it's Shia the Beef or Shia the Cow. I mean, so somebody just said, oh, this is Charles. You know, he heard, like, what does he do? Does he herd cows? No, he is one.
That reminds me of the videos. Have you seen the guy who, like, lives with mountain goats?
Whoa, no, I have not.
He had prosthetic limbs made that are, like, they're like stilts kind of. And then he has this helmet that he wears. It looks like a like speed bicycle racing helmet kind of thing. So he goes around on all fours. Like imagine like Andy Serkis recording Gollum, you know, or for Planet of the Apes or something. So he's like wandering around on all fours with these like prosthetic limbs on and then this helmet. And he's just out with like this herd of mountain goats, butting heads with him and stuff.
Like, because he wants to live with the goats, or
yeah, just... it's like he thinks he's part of their community.
That's a little weird.
Yeah,
but it's like, okay, buddy, you had the wherewithal to say, "I need to talk to like a medical device company to develop prosthetic limbs." It's like at that point,
I don't need.
Well, at that point, it's just like, don't you think you're a little bit different than goats? Because a goat wouldn't do that. A goat would not consult a medical device company to say, "Make me some prosthetic limbs to turn me into another animal."
I feel like there's got to be some moral and ethical obligation if you were that medical device company to be like, okay, so tell us what you'd like. Oh, and all of your limbs function correctly. Okay, yeah, we need you to spend the next 6 months with our psychiatrist before we're going to make these for you.
But why? I mean, they're like, well, we can design them and make them for 40 grand and he'll buy them. Why not?
Yeah, I would say there's probably some maybe... mental health issues going on there that need to be resolved.
Probably. But maybe not, right? Oh, excuse me. I was just thinking maybe he's, you know, not normal. I mean, he'd be kooky at least, but maybe just like, yeah, I like him and I just want to go live with him. I like the life. You know, he doesn't necessarily think that he is one. He just wants to go live with them. Like Jane Goodall in the Gorillas.
Is that from the Tarzan movie with Brendan Fraser? Ma'am, I knew Jane Goodall, and you are no Jane Goodall.
I have not seen the movie in a long time.
Going back to our name, naming things. So this example that I thought of specifically is like kangaroos. Their offspring are called Joeys.
Oh, yeah.
And then a group of them is called a troop.
T-R-O-U-P-E.
Maybe? Or
T-R-O-O-P?
That's a good question. I don't know the spelling.
Because a troop, T-O-O-P, means like soldier, generally. But then O-U-P-E means like a group of actors or like performing artists, generally.
But is that... I mean, it's just a convention, right? They both mean a group of something.
Well,
and the convention is to use the English spelling for... military and the French spelling for performers.
Well, hold on. The English spelling of troop is a singular person. You don't say, you know, you don't say God bless the troop.
Yeah, but you could, like a troop of soldiers is multiple.
A troop of, I've never
heard. I mean, it means a group. Yeah. And troops in that, like, God bless the troops could be
the group, all the
multiple groups. Yeah, all the groups of soldiers. I think troop always means, I mean, trooper would be the singular in my mind.
Now that I think of it, I don't think I've ever heard the word troop, TR, like WP. Not, excuse me, not W.
WP, double OP.
Double. Oh, excuse me. Not double OP. Sorry, yeah, not WP. I've never heard troop double OP, I guess, used in singular, because it's always you're always referring to a group of them, a group of soldiers. But that also means, because I've never heard it in the singular, that also still implies to me that troop double OP does mean a single soldier, because you never say, here is my troop. You say, here are my troops. And it's like a group of soldiers. And it's not really multiple groups. However, hold on, Ben. I was in Boy Scouts for a while, and we were troop.
Yeah, Boy Scout troop.
Yeah, Boy Scout troop. Okay. Yeah, you might have something there, Ben.
So it's weird, because I think troop singular would be a group, but then he could say troops could mean multiple groups of individuals.
Yeah.
Or it could mean one group of many individuals. It's a very flexible word. Perhaps too flexible.
It needs to be stopped.
I was thinking, though, so like, there's a lot of other species that have really random names for their, you know, like herd is a pretty common one.
Mm-hmm.
But then I want to say it's like a congress of
owls.
Is it owls?
I think so.
I was going to say ravens or crows or something.
No, that's a murder.
Murder of crows.
Yeah. I was thinking congress of owls because it's just so fitting. Owls are generally, you know, thought of as intelligent, kind of sometimes goofy, very, like, whenever they're portrayed in, like, a fantasy setting, they're always, like, a bookkeeper or, you know, right. Something
like that. They have those big eyes.
Yeah. They're, and another tangent, I swear, because I noticed this, and I noticed other people noticing this, I swear owls and house cats are the same animal in different packaging. They behave so similarly.
Yeah, I can see that.
An owl is just a winged house cat. They both hunt.
Things. Or is a cat
really quiet. They're both
just
really
a wingless
goofy.
Owl?
Oh, it could be.
I think part of that has to derive from them both being predatory by nature. Right? So they have that kind of like eyes forward stare, and they are content. Like they're not worried that they're prey for somebody else. So there's like a confidence and a self-assurance that they project.
Sure. But I mean, you know, I would say eagles and hawks would fit in that category, but I wouldn't confuse them with a cat. Not behaviorally. Obviously, I wouldn't mistake an owl for, oh, look at that little cute house cat. You look over, there's just a giant great horned owl sitting there hissing at you.
That reminds me of the other day, Sarah found this like clip where someone was renaming animals as if they were birds. And so they had a house cat and they had renamed it a northern scratcher. So I found a video, or I found like a gif of a tiger and sent it back. And I said, great northern scratcher.
Or
greater northern scratcher. So I think there is another similarity between owls and cats that you wouldn't necessarily have with eagles or hawks, which is just the actual physical size of their eyes and or the proportion of their eyes to the rest of their head / face. And owls kind of have round faces like cats do.
Mm-hmm.
Versus hawks and eagles have a more of that prominent beak and
very pointy, sharp, slender. Their face
is more like almost like a dog.
Yeah, I was gonna say like a Doberman or a pincer, you know, something with a very lean, mm-hmm. pointy face, or greyhound,
or a wolf.
So, were you wondering how we came up with these names?
Well, not necessarily how. It's just like we have a perfectly good generalist terms, like a herd or a pack. You know, I think those are pretty common across multiple species.
Flock.
And then some pompous scientist somewhere decided, oh, I can't just use like herd or pack. Every species needs to have its own special word for the plural, right? Or for the multiple. And I mean, I guess it kind of makes it fun, but it's also hard to remember. It's like, look at that group of crows, that flock of crows. Oh, that's not right. It's a murder.
I'm guessing that... at one point, there were some legitimate, like, weird names for groups of certain animals. And then once zoology really took off, the you know this the zoologists were like, well, there's no one standard. There's not only just not a single standard word for a group of animals, but what different words there are, there's no consistency between them. So, you know, you have a flock of birds. Oh, so do we use flock for, you know, flying animals or birds? Well, no, because you also have a flock of sheep. Okay. And you have a flock of sheep, but you have a herd of cattle. Okay. So herd or flock isn't like, you know, neither one of them are the standard term for livestock. And, you know, they were trying to find patterns, and maybe they just realized that there weren't any, particularly with maybe some of those already pre-existing I guess ancestral weird group names, and then they just sort of ran with it because there's no way that some of these weren't, you know, made with, you know, tongue in cheek, like a Congress of Owls.
Right.
They
Oh, I
definitely knew what they were doing.
absolutely. And I also think like flock of birds, so if you say it generically, it's correct, right? Flock applies generically to birds. But you could be in a situation where like, look at that flock of birds, and they're like, no, it's a murder because it's actually crows, right? So it's
Right.
like it's a weird instance where it's true in the generic, but once you make it specific, it's not like a subset of the generic. Right, it's just something totally different.
Wait, I'm not following that trick. So are you saying that if you have a group of crows, are you saying that it is a flock and it's a murder? Both terms are legit, or are you saying only
You
murder
can
is legit?
only call it a flock if you call it generically birds, and be technically
Oh.
correct.
So you could have a flock of, like, you could see a group of crows or ravens or
Yes.
whatever, and you could say, look at that flock of birds, or look at that murder of crows or ravens, but you couldn't say, look at that flock of crows.
Correct. Yeah. So it's either you like, it's correct if you use both generic terms, or it's correct if you use both specific terms,
But not if you mix and match.
but not if you're correct. Yeah.
Oh. Now, are you saying this with confidence? Like, did you read that somewhere on the interwebs, or are you just speculating that's the case?
I'll say it's like, I'll say I'm like 75% confident.
Okay.
It's more than just guessing. It's like slightly informed guessing.
Now, what about the, because you also mentioned, like, why do we have such unique and often, I would say it's not as diverse as the group names, but different names for an adult animal versus a adolescent animal. Why do we call it a fox, but when it's an adolescent, we call it a kit? You know, a cat and a kitten, they're kind of close. I mean, they have both have the K and the T, or they have the K sound and the T.
I was like, how do you spell cat?
But that's the difference. One of them starts with KI, the other one starts with CA. It's like, okay, that's a little, you know, not the same. And then dog and puppy are way out there. Fox and kit. Sheep. What's sheep? Is sheep that
Kid.
sheep and then kid.
A kid.
No, I know that applies for goats. Does that apply for sheep as well?
Oh, a lamb?
Lamb. Lamb and sheep. Goat and kid.
Mutton.
Mutton is the meat of a lamb.
The meatin.
No. Or is mutton just sheep in general? Mutton may just be sheep in general.
Yeah, I was thinking, so veal is
Young cow.
young cow. Is there a veal of lamb meat?
I thought there was. Oh, you know what? It might just be called lamb. I think mutton is a. I think sheep is to mutton as lamb is to lamb, as cow is to, or steer is to beef, as crap. What's a young
Well,
steer called?
steers, young steer would, I mean, just a steer, I think.
They don't have an adolescent term, because they have an ad. What's heifer? Is that an
No.
adolescent cow?
Heifer, so it's not necessarily age specific. Like in pigs, there are sows and there are gelts, and a gelt is just a pig which hasn't had piglets yet, a female pig.
So it tends to imply that they're younger, but it's not a guarantee necessarily.
I see.
And it's the same with a steer and a heifer. Like, I mean, a steer is just a neutered male. It could be 6 months old or it could be 5 years old.
Right.
So there probably are more specific terms. I don't know what they are, though.
Ooh, I know horses also have a variety of different names. Like a gelding is a castrated male. A stallion is an uncastrated male, but there might be another... There might be another
well, there's criterion. A colt is a adolescent male.
Yep. And then, I forget what the females are called. Oh, mare. Well,
mare, yeah. And there's a foal is a...
Adolescent mare?
No, it's an adolescent, period. It's not specific. Or it's not even adolescent. Adolescent, it's like a newborn would be a foal.
Okay. So you go from foal to colt to either... gelding or stallion. I guess you could go from stallion to gelding, but you're not going from gelding to stallion. Yeah. Not without some major advances in medical technology.
Yeah. And I don't know if you go from
colt to stallion.
No, what was the first? Foal to mare directly? Or is there an intermediate?
I would think there's, because there's an intermediate for the males. I would think they would have to have a term for the females, because it would have to be, they're not babies, but they aren't sexually mature to breed yet.
Right.
And they would probably have a
term. Mares, I think, have already foaled.
Oh.
Maybe I'm wrong in that.
But. Why do they, well, I was going to ask, and you brought this up for pigs too, where there's a sow and then there's a, what is it? Gilt?
Gilt, G-I-L-T.
Yeah. I was like, why do they care if it's already had babies versus it can just, you know, it is now able to have babies? Why do they differentiate it that way? But I'm wondering if that came, if that differentiation and that terminology or nomenclature came about when, you know, so long ago, where the only real indication as to whether or not a female animal livestock can have babies is, oh, she's pregnant. Now we know.
Yeah, it's kind of the animal equivalent of the word virgin, right? Where the presumption is that she would be pregnant and have had piglets or whatever. If she'd been bred. So it's kind of a, like, if this, then that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know how they arrived at one versus the other, except that maybe I'm wrong on my definition, right? I might have misunderstood it, but I think also there's an element of, if you're a farmer, a shepherd, you know, a cattle, what are they called? Rancher? What you care about is whether or not they've reproduced, not whether they've been bred.
Aren't those the same thing?
Not if they don't. I mean, not if they don't carry to term or if they don't get impregnated or whatever.
But you said you care if they've reproduced, not if they've been bred. Which I'm assuming you mean that have been used to get off.
You don't care if they have mated. You care if they actually give birth.
But wouldn't you also want to know, like, hey, you know, we need more cows or we need more horses or sheep, whatever. We need to know which sheep to try to, you know, do the hibbity-dibbity with each other. And it's like, is this sheep... Is this female sheep a, you know, sexually mature female or a sexually immature female? Like, and, you know, you could,
yeah.
Well, it's like, well, she's had babies, so I'm assuming she's sexually mature. Or it's like, well, she hasn't had babies, but she probably is. So you can, you know, she's a blank. She's a sexually mature female who hasn't necessarily had babies yet, but she is sexually mature. Or it's like, no, she's not sexually mature. She's a blank. Don't use her.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing, yeah, there's probably some gray area in that.
And I'm
between reaching maturity and giving birth, where you could potentially use either name and be correct.
I'm speculating if there was no easy way to tell if they were sexually mature than if they had already given birth. And so that's just why that's the differentiating, or that's the differentiator for the nomenclature.
Well, that's there's like going into heat and stuff, right? Which is how most of that is determined.
But maybe it's not very easy to tell if a certain animal's in heat, or maybe they weren't assuming.
It's pretty easy to tell for pigs, at least. I think for a lot of animals, when you're around them, the signs are pretty unmistakable.
What's the sign for a pig? Like, how would you know if it's in heat or not?
Their reproductive organs become swollen and stuff like that. They start leaking fluids and all the good signs, you know?
Why is it that so many animals that, you know, so many mammals go into heat, but humans don't?
It's just that the signs are less obvious, right?
But it would be on a monthly cycle, right? But so many other animals are on a yearly cycle. What I'm guessing is like a deer, right? You know, mating season for deer is big because of hunting. But that happens once a year. So do deer only get like one menstrual cycle per year? Or do they have it every month? Or some period, you know,
that's no pun intended.
Yeah, that's on the weeks of, you know, a few weeks or a few months, but not the full year.
You know, I'm pretty sure they just have one. I think you're right.
So then why is it that humans are monthly? I wonder why that is. So many mammals are annual, but humans are monthly. And I'm sure there's others that are too, but.
I think they'll go back to the conversation we had a couple of episodes ago about like your likelihood of getting pregnant or carrying to term. I would say for most animals is much higher than humans. And so like you need more attempts before you actually get a viable pregnancy that carries to term for a human than for many animals.
And it's interesting because one, you know, like look at house cats, dogs, deer, their lifespan. I actually don't know what the lifespan of a deer is, but you know, dogs and cats are usually on the order of, you know, 10 or a dozen years or so, you know, give or take, but it's not like, you know, humans live like 5, 6, 7, 8 times as long, but their, you know, cycles are once a year. So like a dog or a cat will be in heat, you know, throwing a number out, about 10 times in its lifetime. But a human female will be, quote, in heat. I don't know if that's a derogatory way of putting it. But, you know, the human equivalent of being
fertile.
Fertile. 12 times, you know, however long. Oh, wait, no, excuse me. I forgot about menopause, and I'm sure animals have that too. So a dog or cat may only have like 5 cycles in its whole life. A female human, like a woman, would have, you know, hundreds of cycles in her life. So like the proportion is so off.
Wait, but you're saying dogs are only once a year? That doesn't sound right to me.
I thought they were. I thought dogs only go into heat like around the same time of year.
I think I want to say it's like every, I was going to say similar, like every month or every so often, unless they're pregnant.
Right. Oh,
I think it's way more often than once a year. Maybe I'm wrong, but
I've never owned a dog, much less a non-spayed dog. So I'm just kind of going off of what I thought. And there's not a lot of unspayed dogs out there. Thanks, Bob.
That's another thing where it's like we have separate words for what it, like castration, neuter, spay. Like they're all performing the same function.
So
we have separate words for them.
I do have a question. So I thought at least because like whenever you hear that a man was, you know, castrated, either as a means of torture or in the olden days, like there were things called eunuchs, which were men who were intentionally castrated at a young age.
It was another operating system, not Apple or Windows. Unix.
What?
Unix?
Oh my gosh.
I thought you were going to get it right away.
Nope. I never realized that those two words are phonetically identical. Now I'll never be able to hear the hear the name of that operating system of Unix. I won't be able to hear that the same anymore. You're Thanks, welcome. Ben. You just ruined it for me. Not that I interact with it a lot, but
anyway, continue.
Yeah. So I've heard maybe conflicting definitions that castration just means removing the coin purse versus it's removing the coin purse and the schnitzel.
Wow. You're saying castration specifically?
Yes. I'm saying I have heard, or I don't know which it is.
I have performed many castrations, and it's just removing the testes.
The coin purse, if you will.
Oh, the purse is still there. You just take the coins out of it.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, snap. Oh. Oh, that's worse somehow.
Well, okay, so for pigs, it's within their first, the first week that they're alive. At least this is the way that we did it. You would take a scalpel, make two parallel cuts side by side, squeeze the testes out, cut them off with the scalpel, spray iodine on them, and then let them go. And they'd be healed shut within a week, almost just scars at that point, almost.
I'm struggling over here.
But for something like a bull or a horse or something, they tend to do, I think, more like rubber bands, where they just, it cuts off blood flow, and then they just kind of shrivel and go away over time. But, yeah. Anyway, I think in all cases, the fluid drain is still left untouched. Oh, so the only instance in which that would happen, I think, would be a case of some sort of weird torture scenario.
That was a very uncomfortable conversation for me.
I mean, this whole I don't remember how we got all the way on to it was different names for different types of animals.
Yeah, and we started talking about
when they're in heat.
Yeah,
that took a turn, but I think, summarizing multiple topics here, it's fascinating where instances in language where we think it's necessary to have a really super specific word that differentiates between age and sex and whatever else, right? When the actual thing that's being described is essentially the same in each instance. But anyway, I think we did those topics justice. Talked a lot about animals today. And we answered the age-old question of woodchucks chucking wood.
We did. I'm proud of us, Ben.
Yep. Well done. Patting myself on the back. Literally. So with that, we're glad that you joined us for today's tangent. As always, if you're listening and you'd like to participate in a future episode, if you have a topic, suggestion, or just want to give us any feedback, the link to our Google form is in the episode description. So feel free to click on through to that and let us know what you think. So until next time, take care.